Some of the things that we're trying to do is just sort of close a bunch of loopholes. So right now, if you go on your iPhone, for instance, and download a movie or rent a movie tonight, you're not going to pay a sales tax. But if you go down to Walmart or go down to any store and buy a DVD at Kroger, you're going to pay a sales tax. So we think we shouldn't be treating these companies where you buy things online differently than the mom and pop shops that are here in West Virginia. So expanding that tax to include digital downloads brings us about $10 million and makes our tax system much fairer. That's one idea. Another thing, too, is personal services. There's some things we don't tax. We don't apply a sales tax. It just doesn't make any sense. So if you go to a barber shop or you go to a beauty salon and get your hair cut or you go to a nail salon or a tattoo parlor, you don't pay a sales tax. And it just there's really no discernible reason for that other than there just happens to be a carve out. So if we can close some of those loopholes, that would help broaden the base and bring in some revenue. Those are two good examples.
There are a couple other specifics that I want to talk about, and one of them is the scaling back personal income tax exemptions. Basically, everybody in West Virginia gets a $2,000 tax exemption when they go to file their taxes. And you all are saying if a household has a joint income between $150,000 and $200,000 for that year, they should start phasing out the tax exemption for them. If that household makes more than $200,000, we should just get rid of that tax exemption. Why make that change?
Well, first of all, it's exactly what the federal government has done for a long time. They phase out the exemption. But you also have to look at over the last 30 years, who's really benefited largely from economic growth? Who's doing well? Well, it's mostly the people on the top. Most of the income gains over the last 30 or 40 years have gone to the top. Meanwhile, our personal income tax schedule has remained the same since 1987. Scaling that back a little bit on the people who are have the best ability to pay makes sense.
Well, two things here. You know, the first is the new Republican majority came in last year and they put together this tax commission to study the state's tax code. Mm-hmm. This was not a thing that ever came up in that study. But second, this also seems like a more complex change. Is it realistic to say they can come back in that special budget session for just a couple of days and we can get 134 people to understand this change to the tax code?
Yeah, I think it would be fairly easy because this is what happens at the federal level if you're talking about the exemption. I don't think it would be that very difficult for people to understand. The big part is to understand that it's progressive, too. All of the tax proposals, the telecommunication tax, the tobacco tax, the expansion of sales taxes on other services, all take a larger chunk of income out of low and moderate income families than higher income families. So you have to look at the top, too. You have to understand, too, that when you're looking at the top and you're talking about raising taxes, it's much better to raise taxes on the top because those people tend to save their money and not spend it directly into the economy as much as middle class and lower income people.
Well, let's talk about two of those taxes that you just brought up, the increase to the tobacco tax and the sales tax on telecommunications services. This is basically a sales tax on cell phones or if you still have a landline, those kinds of
yeah.
things. And those were two tax increases that Governor Tomlin presented to lawmakers in January. You know, the tobacco tax was passed in the Senate. It failed in the House, I think in the House Finance Committee. Telecommunications tax didn't move in either chamber. So why recommend things that lawmakers don't seem willing to take on?
Well, I think if you poll it, that's the thing, especially with the tobacco tax. This has overwhelming support. And because we don't have a high enough tobacco tax, it dramatically increases the health care cost and the things in our state budget, like the state's Medicaid program. The Medicaid program's $4 billion program. The state provides almost a billion of that. Large reason it's so expensive, too, is because we have a very unhealthy population. So it makes sense to help reduce health care costs and save lives by increasing the tobacco tax to at a level that can do that. The problem was the governor's proposal was just not quite enough to really get people to stop smoking, especially teens. So that's why we were proposing to go with a full dollar like the Senate did, and I had very strong bipartisan support there. But we should also look at the flip side, too, to understand that this is a very regressive tax that falls on to especially low-income West Virginians. And one of the things that we've offered over the last couple of years as a way to deal with that that would have a dramatic impact is a refundable state earned income tax credit. About 26 states in this country have a state EITC modeled after the federal one. This would provide a huge work incentive to to low-income families, especially single mothers. And it also help improve the upside-down tax system that we currently have with low- and middle-income people paying a higher share of their income in taxes than higher-income people.
Let's move on to the natural gas severance tax. The Senate this year approved a bill that initially would just decrease the severance tax on coal. They then amended the bill to decrease the severance tax on both coal and natural gas, claiming that both industries are struggling. With that in mind, you know that at least one chamber of the legislature has said, we want to decrease these taxes. You all come in and say, we think you should increase them, at least for natural gas. So when you take these recommendations to lawmakers, how do you argue that point, knowing that a lot of them sit on the opposite side of the fence?
Well, if you go back to that time period in the Senate, if you remember, that was a very lot of political posturing going on it. They actually, I think, loved that bill to kill it. So saying that they actually wanted to decrease the natural gas severance tax, I'm not sure that that's what happened. I think what they did was they did that to make the fiscal impact so big that nobody would go forward with passing the bill in the House and put them in an awkward position. That's my guess. But when you do polling on the severance tax, it is one of the only popular taxes along with the tobacco tax. And there's a very good reason for that. You know, research shows that severance taxes have little impact on natural gas extraction and that the tax falls primarily on out-of-state customers and producers. It is the most progressive tax we have in West Virginia, and our inadequate taxation of it is one reason why West Virginia sort of is – people have said we sort of have a colonial economy where we've based our economy on the extraction of minerals.
So I want to talk about one thing that was not on your list of recommendations. The Senate Finance Chair, Mike Hall, has been very clear that the severance tax has been the base of West Virginia's tax income in the past, and that's not a stable revenue source. Senator Hall says the most stable tax revenue there is the food tax. And that's something that West Virginia decided to phase out. Why not recommend to lawmakers looking to something as stable as a food tax?
Well, you know, I think our state's worsening revenue situation isn't just entirely due to plunging energy prices. But the real problem in our situation, too, has been exacerbated by the impact of tax cuts that we've done in the past, two of them being the elimination of the business franchise tax and the decrease in the corporate net income tax from 9 to 6.5%. Both of those are at least $225 million in revenue we'd have this year but don't have. And the food tax you talked about is about $170 million in revenue. One of the problems is if you're on SNAP, for instance, at 130% of the poverty level below, you're not paying any sales tax. So if your concern with the food tax is that we shouldn't tax low-income people, if that's your concern, that is why it's not a very targeted tax cut. That's why we talked a good bottom-up tax cut is a refundable state EITC to target those people directly, if that's our idea of where we want to get relief. You know, I think that is something that we could look at if it's paired with a bottom-up tax cut like a state EITC.